Morning. Today's daf in Sukkah is daf Vav. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learned in memory of Lois Lupin Zaltzman. We are on the bottom of Hey Amid Beis. Gemara yesterday was a discussion dedicated to the number 10, 10 tefachim. The maximum height of a sukkah is 20 amos, but the minimum height of a sukkah is 10 tefachim. So the Gemara looked for a source in terms of where that should be. Where does that come from, that the minimum height of a sukkah should be 10 tefachim and no less than 10 tefachim? As Tosfos pointed out yesterday, this is not just a question regarding sukkah, this is also a question regarding mechitzah in general. Tosfos says, like mechitzah on Shabbos. So we know that in order to have a base mechitzah, to have a base wall, you have to be a height of 10 tefachim. So where does that come from? Where does that number 10 tefachim come from? So as I mentioned yesterday, there's the easy answer and then there's the more challenging answer. So the easy answer, I guess you could be the judge of which one's easy, which one's hard, but the easy answer is Halacha Moshe Misinai, and that's where the Gemara ended the daf off yesterday by saying, it's Halacha Moshe Misinai, part of the old tradition, certain halachas have no textual basis to it, it's just simply it's part of the Mesorah, part of the Torah Shabbat Peh, but without any connection to any pasuk in Chumash. Good, that's the simple answer. In fact, that's how the Gemara ended off yesterday. The difficult answer, it's not difficult, it's just more complex, fraught with difficulties. The Gemara spent nearly the entire daf yesterday discussing it, is that we learned it out from the Mishkan, and we see it from the Keruvim, where the Keruvim are spreading out their wings. The Torah uses a description when spreading out the winds, their wings, that sochachim bekanfeihem, that they create a schach, they create a canopy with their wings, and we figured yesterday the distance between the wings and the aron. And we figured it out to be 10 tefachim. So therefore we learned in general that in order for it to be kosher sukkah, it has to be minimally 10 tefachim. Okay, numerous problems with that approach, the Gemara noted yesterday, including and not limited to the fact that not everyone agrees that there's a 10 tefach space between the wings and the aron. Some are of the opinion that there's an 11.5 tefach space between the wings and the aron. Okay, that goes back to yesterday's daf. That was yesterday's daf in its discussion. The Gemara today's daf primarily is going to deal with one topic and one topic only, and that's Halacha Moshe Misinai. So as I mentioned yesterday, we have this concept where we have the halachos that are generated not by a pasuk and chumash, but simply because Torah Shabbat Peh. That's part of the tradition. I mentioned yesterday, just quickly to reiterate today, it's such basic information. The Rambam says that there are five components to Torah Shabbat Peh. So when the Rambam categorizes, he's super organized. So the Rambam categorizes the five sections of Torah Shabbat Peh. So one of the sections of Torah Shabbat Peh is Halacha Moshe Misinai, meaning there is what he calls the Perushim HaMukubalim. There is the accepted pshat in the psukim, like I gave the example yesterday of Ayin Tachas Ayin. Then the second category, the Rambam says, is Halacha Moshe Misinai, where you have this idea that we have just simply halachas that are non-psukim generated. Just simply that it is because the HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, and he handed it down to us. And then the Rambam brings down as the third category, Yugim Milmido Shatana Dreshas Behem, parenthetical note, the Rambam writes. That's where you're going to find most of the machlokas in throughout the Gemara. On category number three, meaning because Yud Gimel Midrash Atar Nidrash Asbahem is basically methodology. It's terms of how do we darshan? Do we darshan with Ribu Imiut? Do we darshan with Klal Uprat? Etc. etc. The Rambam says that's where you're going to find the most proliferation of machlokis in that third category of Yud Gimel Midrash. And then the fourth and fifth category are Gzeros and Takanos. Right? The Gzeros that were instituted by the Chachamim and the Takanos that were instituted by the Chachamim. Invested with the power of the Torah in order to legislate. So they do. They legislate both in terms of preventing measures so that we don't violate the Torah, and they legislate also in terms of actually instituting Dinei Derabanan, like Megillah, like Hanukkah, like Erevin, like Netilas Yadayim, etc., etc. Okay, so that's the five components of Torah Shabbat Peh. So today's daf, daf Vav, is going to deal primarily with this idea of Halacha Moshe Misinai. And the segue between yesterday's daf and today's daf is very straightforward. Meaning yesterday's daf, the Gemara just concluded that the 10 tefach minimum of a sukkah, of a wall, is Halacha Moshe Misinai. So now we're going to pick it up in the Gemara. We're going to look at the bottom of Hamad Beis, and the Gemara is going to pick it up from this very point. De'amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi. So the Gemara quotes Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi, Amar Rav, Shi'ur, and Chatzitza Mechitza, and Halacha Moshe Misinai. So the Gemara over here says that three different aspects of Halacha falls under this category of halacha moshe mesinai. So one of them is shir, the amounts. The two is chatzitza. Chatzitza is when you go into the mikvah, you can't be any separation between you and the water. You have to come into direct contact with the water, and nothing can be a barrier between you and the water. We'll talk more about that later this morning. And mechitza. And when it comes to walls, so the halachas of walls. So all the halachas we learned yesterday, which the Gemara is going to reiterate again today, Dofen Akuma, Lavud, Gorasi, Gorachis, all those legalisms when it comes to walls. So they're all these halachas are halacha Moshe Mesinai. Okay, that is the Gemara statement. It's a big statement by Rav. Okay, this is the fundamental place in Shas where the Gemara discusses it. Good. Now the Gemara asks, Shiurin Daraisanenu. So, you say that Shiurin is Halacha Moshe Mesinai. The Gemara asks the question, what do you mean it's Halacha Moshe Mesinai? It's Daraisa. Now, just to be careful about how the Gemara is phrasing the question and what the Gemara means by this question, it'll be clear in just a moment, but I'm just pointing it out. When the Gemara was saying Halacha Moshe Mesinai, the Gemara was not saying it's not Daraisa. Halacha Moshe Mesinai means it's a Din Daraisa. What the Gemara is asking right now is, what do you mean it's not grounded, it's not rooted in the Torah? It is rooted in the Torah. There are psukim that speak to shiurim. So we don't need to go back to the Halacha Moshe Mesinai to explain this Halacha. We could just simply look up psukim in the Chumash. And now what the Gemara is going to do is the Gemara is going to try to demonstrate that we have a pasuk in the Torah that speaks to the idea of shiurim. How do I know that? Dichsiv. The Torah says, Eretz Chita, Sora, Geffen, Tein, Arim, Eretz, Zeshem, and Dvash. So the Shivas Aminim, the seven species that are connected and most attached and associated to Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, V'am Rav Chanan, Kol HaPasuk, Zeh, L'Shirim, Ne'amar. So Rav Chanan says, you know this Pasuk? Now, Kipshuta, the simple Pshat of the Pasuk, is that the Torah is just simply highlighting, these are the seven grain species of Eretz Yisrael. Right? Two of them are grain and five of them are fruit. These are the seven species of Eretz Yisrael. But the Gemara says, but we have a tradition by Rav Chanan that each one of these seven is actually connected with a shear. And so what we'll be doing now for basically half the daf today is we're going to go through all seven of these species, and we're going to note how it's connected to a halachic shear. So we start off one. We're going to go one by one. Now, remember, this is going to be basically, not to lose the forest in this discussion, we're simply highlighting that there's a pasuk in Chumash referring to the seven species, and therefore, how can you say that when it comes to shear, it's halacha Moshe Mesinai, and it's not rooted in the Torah? It is rooted in the Torah, and the Gemara is now demonstrating how all these seven fruit are mentioned in Chumash and are really connected to a shear. And therefore it is rooted in Chumash, and therefore it shouldn't be considered a halacha Moshe Mesinai. That's the Gemara's question. It will take the Gemara to ask this question, because the Gemara is going to go through the entirety of all seven species, and then the Gemara is going to give an answer, and the answer will take all of but one line. So about 20 lines of Gemara more to develop the question, and one line to answer the question. Okay, so we go, step by step. Number one, Va'amar, Chita Lebeza Menuga. So wheat. Where does wheat come up in halacha as a shear? What shear is wheat? Dinan, so the Gemara says it comes up in the following. Hanichnas lebeis manuga. You go into a house with saras. Now, a house that's infected with saras, so the house is a source of tama, and it makes you tama just simply upon entering the house. It is like tumas mace. Tumas mace has a unique aspect where if I'm under the same roof as a mace, so I am subject to being tame just by simply being in the same airspace. This is what's called tumas ohel. So we have a similar concept regarding beis hamenuga. If I have a house with saras, so the same thing were to occur. You walk into the house and you become tame simply upon entrance. There's an interesting wrinkle in this halacha, which the Gemara is now going to demonstrate, and connected to wheat. Hanichnas beis hamenuga. So let's say you can walk into a house with saras. The kelev al ketefav. And you're not wearing your clothing. I know that's strange, but your clothing is on your shoulder. The Gemara here, we're making the brace is making a point. So just it'll take a second to make its point. But you're not wearing your clothing. Your clothing is on your shoulder. V'sandal v'tabasabi yado, and your shoes in your hand. You're not wearing your shoes. You're not wearing your ring. Okay, they are. You're holding the clothing. So hu v'hein tamei miyad. So everything becomes tummy immediately. Okay. In other words, what we would have expected. You walk into a house of tzaras, you become tamei immediately. I mean, where do we ever find a time delay on tumah? You know, there is no time delay on tumah. But as you'll see in just a moment, that's not always true. There is no time delay on Tumah. You walk in, you become Tameh, period. However, top of Vav and Aleph, Hayalavush Kelev Asandala Biragla, Vatabasav Betbasav. But let's say you're wearing the clothing, and you're wearing the Kelim, and you're wearing the shoes, and the rings are on your fingers. So in other words, you're wearing everything. Hu Tameh Miyad, Vehin Tarin Achiyesh Bechte Achilas Pras. So you become tummy immediately. You walk into the house, you're in the house of Saras. So you become tummy immediately. What about the clothing? The clothing do not become tummy until achilas pras, the amount of time it takes to eat a half a loaf of bread. So in other words, we have an exceptional halacha in the world of Tumah Tahara. I don't know if it's precedented. I don't know if it exists anywhere else. I don't think it does. Where your clothing don't become tummy until you spend some time in the house. Why should this be? So if you take a look at Rashi, second line on Vav Amud Aleph, Rashi gives us the source psukim for all this, that if you eat in the house, you need to wash your clothing. And the Gemara, and Rashi quotes V'dashim B'Toras Kohanim, Rashi quotes the Medrash, Ein li ala ocha v'shochev, ocha v'lo shochev, shochev v'lo ocha, lo ocha v'lo shochev minayin. It sounds like, from the simple reading of the Pesukim, that in order to become tummy when you walk into a house of Tzaras, you have to eat in the house. Really? You have to eat in the house? What if I don't eat? Tam lam yichabes begadav, riba shtei pa'amim, ksiv yichabes begadav. So we have a ribui. The Torah repeats itself, and the Torah says you have to wash your clothing. So even if you don't eat, you're still going to become tummy. So then, why in the world is the Torah describing walking to a house of Taras and eating? The Im Sofeno, the Medrash asks this question. The Im Sofeno, the Rabbis, Akol, Mata Malamar Va'ochel. So why then does the Torah say Va'ochel? Why is the Torah describing eating? Liten Shir Leshochev Kedei Achila. So it tells us that when you walk into a Beis HaMenuga, a house of Tzaras, so you become tummy immediately, but your clothing is on delay. She'ein ton kibas begadim ad sheyishe kedei achila. You don't require kibas begadim. Your clothing don't require to be toveled in the mikvah until the amount of time it takes to eat. V'gufo tummy miyad. Now you become, you, your body becomes tummy immediately.
Okay, so
Rashi quotes the Medrash. The Medrash generates the Pesukim. Good. So when you walk into a house of Saras, so you yourself, your body becomes tummy immediately, your clothing become tummy only after spending time in the house. How much time? The time that it takes to eat achilas pras, a half of a loaf. And then the Gemara says, pas chitim v'lo pas ta'orim. And here we go. And what kind of bread? Wheat bread, not barley bread. Rashi points out, I wouldn't have known this without Rashi, wheat bread tastes quicker to eat, right? It's softer. It's easier to eat than barley bread, so that's a shorter amount of time. Mesav, now, a wolfing the bread down? No. Reclining v'ocha b'liftan and eating it with a little bit of jelly. Now, liftan doesn't exactly mean jelly, but in other words, eating it at a quote-unquote normal rate. Okay. That is the halacha regarding chita. So it's interesting. We're not really talking about the amount of the wheat kernel. What we're really describing is wheat as the ingredient to make bread, wheat as opposed to barley. But again, the point of the Braisa is, this very long narrative of the Gemara, is that every one of the Zayin Minim represents a different shear. So for chita, for wheat, the shear is the amount of time that a person walks into a Beis HaMenuga where his clothing becomes tameh, the amount of time that it takes to eat a pras of bread, a half a loaf of bread, and specifically wheat bread. Okay, that takes us through shear number one. Shear number two, sa'ora. Now we're up to the barley. So that's easy. When it comes to sara, the barley grain is how much bone chip of human remains makes a person tame. Now when we talk about human remains, so generally speaking, if you have a mace, if you have a dead body in the room, so it gives off tumah in one of three ways. Maga, contact, masa, carrying, and ohel, and being under the same roof. But there, that ohel tumah is only if you have human remains, meaning but of the flesh. Now, there are occasions where bones give off tumas ohel. Rashi over here points out, right on this daf, if you have the skull, the vertebrae, or the majority of the bone structure, of the human remains of one human being. So that's going to give off tumas ohel. But just in general, a bone does not give off tumas ohel. Bone only gives off two of the three types of tumah. Bone transmits tumas maga. Bone transmits tumas masa, but not tumas ohel generally. So how much bone do you need in order for the transmission of tumah? That's the halach of Sa'ora. Sa'ora tells me that if I have the bone chip the size of a barley kernel, so then it transmits tumah, tumas maga, and tumas ohel. Sorry, wrong. Tumas maga and tumas masa, not tumas ohel. Okay, that is the halacha regarding Sa'ora. Now what are we up to? We're up to Geffen. Geffen is in reference to grape. Geffen kidei revius yayin lanazir. So Geffen vis-a-vis revius yayin lanazir. What exactly does that mean? We generally know what the Gemara means right now. The Gemara means that we know that a nazir can eat grape product. But what is it? But we're not talking about the grapes that the nazir can eat. We're talking about the shear, the amount. What exactly do we mean when we say the Geffen represents the shear? Okay, so take a look at Rashi. Now, Rashi gives an explanation. Now, the truth of the matter is if you take a look at Tosos gives a different explanation and goes off on Rashi. But we're just going to do it from the context of Rashi. Kidei revius yayin. We'll read Rashi inside. Rashi writes, Bishari suri nazir di iklaman damen meseches nazir dechartanim velulavim va'alav mitzarf l'shir revius yayin. That in terms of a nazir can not only not eat the grape, but there's an opinion in the Gemara Nazir that the nazir cannot eat any product of the vine. So grape leaves are no good. Happen to be a big fan of grape leaves. But but Rashi points out that a nazir can eat grape leaves. Grape leaves, grape shoots, anything that comes off the vine is prohibited to a nazir. In terms of what amount are we talking about? How much grape leaves does a nazir need to eat? So this is now where the shear of Geffen comes into play. She'im yitneim lekos male yayin, ad she'yetze memenu revius yayin. So Rashi over here talks in terms of volume. How much grape leaves, grape shoots, seeds of the grape, how much needs to be eaten by the nazir in order for the nazir to violate his nazirus? So volume. And how is volume going to be measured? Through displacement. But Rashi points out not the displacement of water, but rather the displacement of wine. Rashi over here says, "Ashi yatsamim and revius yain." So what you're going to do is you're going to take obviously, again, the nazir doesn't want to do any of this, but we're talking about just quantifying. How much does a nazir need to eat? So you take the leaves, the shoots, and the seeds, and you put them into a cup of wine, and until you get to the point where a revius, a quarter of a log of wine, escapes the cup. So we're talking about its displacement. And Rashi points out you can't compare the displacement of water with the displacement of wine. Why? Because of the viscosity of wine. Wine is a very thicker liquid. And what happens with the wine is that the wine doesn't just simply spill out once it gets over the top, but it aggregates on the top. It takes a while because what ends up happening because of the thick viscosity is that it creates there's more tension on the top, it's thicker on the top, and it doesn't fall over the side of the cup until you throw in a lot more. So comes out according to Rashi then that because we're using wine as the liquid for displacement, you're going to need to throw more in there in order for revius to come out. If you're following, it means then that according to Rashi, we're being makel. It's a leniency that we're using wine and we're not using water. Water, to get a revius of water to come out, just simply whatever the volume is of a quarter of a log. But because we're using wine, so you need to throw more in there in order for that quarter of a log to come out. Okay. Huh? The Gemara here is very terse. The Gemara just simply says that Geffen is the shear for a nazir, meaning again we're looking for an amount, a volume amount. So the way Rashi understands it is Geffen in terms of the liquid used to test volume, as opposed to water. That's how Rashi understands the Gemara. Again, for a different explanation, see Tosfos. But that's how Rashi's working out. And again, according to Rashi, now it comes out to be lenient. The nazir is going to have to eat more in order to be chayiv. Okay, next. Gefen, sorry, Te'ena. Now we're up to the fig. Te'ena. So where does the fig come up in halacha in terms of shear? So it comes up regarding Shabbos, right? We went through Masechet Shabbos. The Gemara there, the Mishnah there, at length go through. Here's how much you have to carry in order to be chayev. This item. And when it comes to food, so the shear generally was a grogeris. If I'm carrying the same volume as a fig on Shabbos for Otzah Shabbos, you're chayev. Carrying less than that, it's pater. Pater of alasar, but if you carry a grogeris, so you're going to be chayev. Good. So that's the shear of Te'ena. Rimon, what about a pomegranate? Danan. Pomegranate also comes up in halacha regarding shearim. Call kli bale batim shearim kerimonim. Let's say you have a utensil in your house. Okay, there's a hole in the utensil. Okay, don't throw it out. Okay, the hole gets a little bit bigger. Still, don't throw it out. What are you going to do? You're going to waste a good kli like that? We'll use it to hold our grapes. The hole gets larger. Don't worry. Don't throw it out. We'll use it to hold our apples. And the Mishnah in Kalim says, as long as the hole gets up to the point of a rimon, people don't throw it out. And because people don't throw it out, it still has functional use. And because it has functional use, it therefore is susceptible to tumah. It still has a shame kli. Once the hole gets to the point of the rimon, so then basically, husband and wife agree, okay, now we can throw it out. Now it has no functional use. I know you can hold a larger fruit in there, but basically a rimon is the point where it no longer has functional use. People throw it out. Therefore, it's not mekabel tuma. It loses its shame kli status. Good. Eretz they shemen. Now we're up to the olive. The olive, that's easy. That's kizayas, the volume of an olive. Most of the shurim in the Torah is kezayis. Now the Gemara originally says, "Eretz shekol shiure kezayisim." Every shear is a kezayis, which the Gemara says, "What do you mean every shear? Kol shiure sakadatcha ha'ika hani damrinan." Have you ignored the last 10 minutes of the daf? Right, we just went over how the wheat has a shear and the barley has a shear and the fig and the pomegranate. So the Gemara says, point well taken. Ela'ema shirov shi'ureha kizaisim. The majority of shear in food is a kizayis. Right, how much iser do you need to eat in order to be chayiv? Generally speaking, kizayis. How much matzah do you need to eat in order to be outside the mitzvah? A kizayis. Kizayis is the general shear for food. Devash, now we're up to dates. Kik kosevas agasim yom kippurim. So date is kosevas agasa, meaning the plump date is the amount of date that you eat on Yom Kippur in order to be chayev. Why is it a plump date? Why is it not the shear of a kezayis? So we've just been down this road, right? We learned together in the 8th parak of Yuma that the Torah never says on Yom Kippur, don't eat. The Torah says on Yom Kippur, v'nisem asnafsho seichem. You have to afflict yourself. And any time you satisfied your hunger pangs, so you have violated the pasuk of v'nisem asnafsho seichem. How much do you need to eat in order to satisfy the hunger? The volume of a date, which as Gemara pointed out back in Yuma, is larger than a kezayis. Larger than a kebetza as well. That was a good discussion that we just recently had in the Gemara in Yuma. Okay, but anyway, good. Pause and breathe. And that is the summation of the Gemara's question. Ama da'araisa ninu. So the Gemara says, so what do you see? That all the shiurim are mentioned in the Torah. So the Gemara's opening statement for today's daf that these are halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, all the shiurim. What do you mean it's halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai? Halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai means it's not connected to a pasuk in Chumash. We just quoted a pasuk in Chumash and we just explained how every one of the Zayin Minin mentioned in the pasuk is connected with a shiur. So the Gemara says, v'tizbara, now does any of this make sense? Shiur and miksivi. So the Gemara notes and the Gemara acknowledges this is not really the source of these halachas. Meaning again, we go back to the point that we made earlier. The pasuk over here is just explaining the pshuto shel mikra. The simple pshat is, here is Eretz Yisrael, and here's where it boasts. It boasts the seven species. And yes, what the Chachamim did is, the Chachamim connected a certain halacha with every one of these species. But it's not that the Torah is generating these halachas based on the pasuk, it's that the halacha is already known, halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai. And the Gemara's terminology over here is asmachta. Asmachta in this context just simply means the Chachamim connect the halacha mesina to a pasuk. But the pasuk is not generating the halacha already is there, and it's just a way of linking the two. Why do the Chachamim link this? Is the question that we've addressed a number of times. Perhaps one of the reasons is purposes of memory, of making connection between the Torah Shebaal Peh and the Torah Shebichsav. Okay, number of reasons why it's done, but it's done. But it's not the source. So therefore, we're back to the beginning, and that's good. Meaning, we are supporting the original statement that Shiurim are Halacha Lamoshe Misinai. Okay, next. Chatzitzin daraisaninu. So the Gemara is also bothered now by chatzitza. We're up to the second topic of today's daf, and that's chatzitza. Chatzitza means that there cannot be a barrier between separating you and the water. When you go into the mikveh, there has to be direct contact with the water in your skin, and anything that will that will present a barrier between you and the water is a chatzitza, and that's no good. And the Gemara says, what do you mean that that's a halach l'moshe misinai? It's a din da'araisa. Meaning, again, same explanations we gave earlier. It's grounded in the Torah. It's a pasuk. The pasuk says, v'rachat b'mayim, sh'lei davar chotzis bein ola bein amayim. The Torah says that you have to wash in water. And that means that they cannot separate you and the water. You have to come into contact with the water. So what do you mean, halach l'moshe misinai? It's a simple pasuk in Chumash. Ki aseh chosa l'sa'aro. So the Gemara says, okay, but there still is halacha moshe misinai that's necessary, because not only does your skin have to come into contact with the water, but your hair needs to come into contact with the water as well. Nima achas kshura. Let's say you have one hair tied in a knot. Chotzesas. That creates a chatzitza. So Rashi explains, because that one hair tied in a knot, meaning it's with that one strand of hair that's tied in a knot, obviously creates a very tight knot, and therefore no water can penetrate inside, and that's a chatzitza. Shalosh, now if I have three strands of hair that are tied into a knot, because there's three strands of hair, so it's thicker, the knot can't be tight, there will be room for water to penetrate. Einan chotzesa, so it doesn't become a chatzitza. Shtayim, so that's a little bit strange. We went from one hair to three hair. One hair tied in a knot is a chatzitza. Three hair tied in a knot is not a chatzitza. The obvious question, what about two? Shtayim eni yodea. So, two, he admits, I don't know. I don't, it's a suffix. I don't know whether two is a chitzitza or not. But anyway, the point the Gemara is making now is that I need the halacha l'moshe misinai, not regarding the basar can't have a chatzitza when going into the mikvah, but the sear, the hair also when going into a mikvah, cannot be a chatzitza between the hair and the water. Sa'aro, just give me a moment. Sa'aro nami da'araisa. So the Gemara says, what do you mean hair is also a din da'araisa? Meaning, it's also found in the Torah. Ninu dechsiv rachatz es bisaro b'mayim. We see this time and again throughout Shas. You wash es bisaro. Bisar is referring to the flesh. The es is a ribui. The es is coming to include something. Right? Kabed es avicha ve'es imecha. So the es is coming to include stepmother, stepfather, oldest brother. So whenever we have an S in the Torah, so the it's a ribui. The sticking point always became es Hashem lokecha tira. Right? That was a right, that was the Shimon Ham Sunni discussion where you got to the Es Hashem and I fear Akash Baruch Hu and right that was a mystery right but a solved mystery right right Rabbi Kiva answered and Rabbi Kiva said Tamid Chachamim. Okay, but anyway, but we have the S, and the S is always a ribui. So Es Hatafel LeBisaro. So that which is ancillary to the body, my new Saro, and that's a reference to the Seir. So granted that the Torah doesn't spell it out directly, but drasha, ribui. So again, the idea behind halacha moshe misinai is that there simply is no connection between the halacha and the Torah. But over here, very strong connection. We have bisaro, we have es. Es is a, and we're going to darshan the word es as a ribui. So it means hair, includes hair as well. So once again, what's the halacha moshe misinai regarding chatzitza? So ki asa hilchas alechad Rav Yitzchak. So the Gemara says, you know what the halacha l'moshe misinai is? Vis-a-vis the statement of Rabbi Yitzchak. What is the statement of Rabbi Yitzchak? We're on top of Vav Amud Beis, Davar Torah, right? According to the Torah, Torah over here meaning, this is now the halacha l'moshe misinai, where we're going to qualify. Rubo u'makbid alav chotzitz, v'she'eno makbid alav eno chotzitz. Okay. So, in order for it to be chatzitza, it needs to be the majority of it is covered. Covered over here meaning that the creates the barrier of separation between you and the water. So it's got to be the majority of the surface area. And rubo umakpid. And it's got to be something that bothers you. Meaning something that you'd like to get removed. Right? Like a stain. Like a dirt. Right? The thick patch of dirt that's on your body. Well, I jumped the gun. I didn't want to say the word body. Right? A thick patch of dirt which you want off. So that's something which is going to serve as a chatzitza. But if it doesn't cover the majority, or you're not makpid, it's not a chatzitza. Doesn't serve as a separation. Now, where does this come from? This is Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Meaning, this is not a pasuk in the Chumash. You're not going to find a pasuk describing the idea, the concepts of rubo and makpid. This aspect of chatzitza is Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. And what did the Chachamim do? I'll come back to the Rashi in just a moment. What did the Chachamim do? Chachamim le gezera. So, rubo makpid alav chotzeitz, v'sheino makpid alav eino chotzeitz. Now, if you're not makpid, if you don't care, right, for whatever reason, it's on you, but it's fine. I don't mind. So, eino chotzeitz, that does not serve as a chatzitza. V'gazra rubo, sheino makpid, mishum rubo amakpid. V'al miyutu d'hamakpid, mishum rubo amakpid. So the Chachamim le gezera. Let's say it covers the majority, but you don't care. Min haTorah, that's not a chatzitza. The Chachamim said, you know what? We're going to legislate that will be a chatzitza because we're only one step removed from being a chatzitza daraisa. Or, let's say it's a small amount, but you're makpid. So the Chachamim said, again, according to the Torah, it's not a chatzitza. What the Chachamim came along and said is, we're going to make a gzera. And they're legislating a gzera because you're only one step away from being chatzitza, because you are makpid, it's just not covering the majority. Let's say it's not covering the majority, it's covering the minority. It's only separating the minority from the water, and you're not makpid. So here now you're two steps away removed from a chatzitza daraisa. The Gemara notes the rabbis didn't make a gzera. Mishum miyuto amakpid inam mishum rubo shein amakpid he gufa gzera v'ananekum anigzor gzera l'gzera. So the Gemara says no, because already if you're one step removed from a chatzitza daraisa, the chachamim made a gzera. But if you're two steps removed, so then no, because then that would be a gzera added on top of a gzera, and that the chachamim don't do. Okay, a big topic of discussion over here. That's the end of the Gemara. We're ready to move on, but just one very basic point. And I almost let the cat out of the bag, but the Gemara over here says that we have our Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim when it comes to Chatzitza, and that is that if it covers the majority and your Makpid, so then that's the Chatzitza. Covers the majority and our Makpid, what are we talking about here? Take a look at Rashi. So Rashi writes the following. So the second Rashi on the Amud, the top line, Rashi says, Rubo, Rov Se'aro Mitunaf. So Rashi says that this Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim is talking specifically about the hair. Meaning, what you could have said very simply is that the Gemara here is talking about the body. Could have said that. Rashi does not say that. Rashi says we're talking about the hair. So Rov Se'aro Mitunaf Petito Kashor Achad Achad Omak Bilav Chotzeitz. So Rashi says that we're talking specifically about the hair. These halachas of rov and makpid is our halacha specific to the hair. That for some reason Rashi separates the hair from the rest of the body. So when it comes to the hair, in order for it to be chatzitza min haTorah, has to be that the majority of your hair is covered with some sort of dirt. Or Rashi gives the example where each hair individually is knotted up. Okay, I know that's strange, but each hair is knotted up, and you're makpid, and you don't want it knotted up, and you want it unknotted, so then it's going to be a chatzitza. But if you have one of the two missing, it will just be a chatzitza derabban, which of course is still a chatzitza. And if you're missing both, meaning it's not the majority of your hair, and you're not makpid, so then it's not a chatzitza at all, not even midrabban. Okay, what comes out according to Rashi? Comes out according to Rashi that this whole discussion is limited to just isolated just to the hair. So when it comes to the rest of your body, meaning your actual body, so there, these rules are no longer in play. And then it would come out according to Rashi that any separation between your body and the water serves as a chatzitza. See where we're going with this discussion? Meaning that if without Rashi, what you could have argued is that you have a little, you have a little something on your body, and you go into the mikvah. Fine, it's not a big deal.
But the hair is only on the head, not on the body.
Correct. But now, according to Rashi, this whole discussion is limited to the hair, and when it comes to the body, any chatzitza on the body would serve as a chatzitza, would serve as an actual separation, a barrier between you and the water, and the tefillah would be no good.
Whether you're machwid about
it
or not.
Right, seemingly. And that would mean then that, and that's why we tend to be machmir when going into the mikvah. I mean, I say we, I don't really discuss the men so much because men don't have a mitzvah to go to the mikvah nowadays. We have a...
What about that case that we had about someone who had the Shem HaShem written on his skin?
Right, correct. Correct. And he, right, so there we discussed chatzitza, and if you remember, the Gemara said that it was a loose bandage, so that water could penetrate. So, right, which actually is supportive of Rashi, because according to, you could have just simply argued the bandage is, it's a miut, it's a small part. Okay, maybe you can argue it's makpid, and that's why you shouldn't tie it on tight. Oh, whatever. But anyway, but it comes out now that according to Rashi, there's a separation between the hair and the rest of the body, and when it comes to the rest of the body, any chatzitza would serve as a chatzitza. Okay, and again, this is not the time nor place to discuss the halachic aspects of it, but just to note and just know that this basic distinction of Rashi, that the halachas of rubar and makpid is for the hair. But for the rest of the body, we don't have these halach l'moshe m'sinai. If you want to already see Rishonim argue with Rashi, you can take a look at Tosfos. Top Tosfos on the Samud, he argues with Rashi. We go on in the Gemara. Okay, so what have we covered so far? Of the big three halach l'moshe m'sinai, we covered so far today Shir, we covered Chatzitza, and now finally, last but not least, we're up to Mechitza. So the Gemara says, Mechitzin ha'da'amaran. So the Gemara says, as far as Mechitza, where is the halacha l'moshe m'sinai regarding mechitza? The Gemara says, "What do you mean? Yesterday's daf." Okay. The Gemara says, "Hanich l'Rav Yehuda l'Rav Meir Michael l'Meimer." Now the Gemara says, "Okay, but as we went through yesterday's daf, we realized Rav Yehuda needed the halacha l'moshe m'sinai, but Rav Meir didn't, because according to Rav Meir, we were able to generate the 10 tefach height based on psukim and the Mishkan and the porsim kanfeim. Now, granted, it was intricate." But it was grounded in Chumash. It was grounded in the Torah. So according to Rabbi Meir, I don't need a halacha l'moshe m'sinai. It's generated from the Pesukim. So Michael Amemar said, the Gemara says, Kiasa hechusa l'gur l'avur v'dofen akuma. So the Gemara says, look, even according to Rabbi Meir, the 10 tefach height of a wall, good. You don't need a halacha l'moshe m'sinai. But consider everything else we did yesterday and the day before. L'avur, When two items are within three tefachim of one another, the gap is closed. We'll talk more about that over the course of this Masechta. Good. Walls going up, walls going down. Good asik, good achis. So that also is halacha Moshe Mitzinai. And dofen akuma. And the idea that the wall bends and that a vertical wall is allowed to bend horizontally and on a perpendicular as long as the horizontal bend doesn't exceed the four amos. So it's considered part of the wall. So where does that come from? So all that is halacha l'moshe m'sinai. And even according to Rav Meir, the halachos and mechitza are needed for halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Okay? Adkan. So big daf today, really fundamental daf today, how shiurin, chatzitzin, and mechitza are all halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Maybe not every aspect of these three, but various aspects of these three are halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Okay. And finally, we're going to start today the last topic discussed in the Mishnah, and that's the topic of three walls. The Mishnah said, a sukkah cannot be higher than 20 amas. The first Mishnah in sukkah cannot be higher than 20 amas. Cannot be less than 10 tefachim, and it must have minimally three walls. Okay. And now we get to discuss today with the minimalist sukkah of three walls. Where does that come from? And as we've discussed already the other day, and we're going to repeat again right now, when we say three walls, we don't exactly mean three walls. It can even be less than three walls. So we have a b'risa. The b'risa says that when it says three walls, so two actual, meaning two full walls. Remember the Gemara the other day said that when it comes to sukkah, it has to be mechitzos nikaros. The walls have to be recognizable. They have to be physical. They have to be real. You have to be able to touch them, to bang on them. Okay, they have to have a certain real aspect to it. Meaning sometimes the legal wall that's created in halacha is not good for the sukkah. Right? The other day we just talked about being on top of a pillar that's 10 tefachim high. There are legal walls that extend up. That's good. That's the concept of good osig. But the Gemara said that doesn't work for sukkah. For sukkah you need mechitzas nikaras. How many do you need? So the Braisa says two. And what about that third wall? So the vishlishis afilo tefach. The third wall can be a tefach. It doesn't have to be a full wall. It only has to be one tefach. Okay, so like we discussed the other day, what's the minimum area size of a sukkah? 7x7 tefachim. So one wall, full wall, second wall, full wall, and a third wall only needs to be one tefach. Tomorrow's daf, we're going to spend a lot of time discussing tomorrow where to put that third wall. Where can it be? Where should it go? That's tomorrow's daf. We'll come back to that in just a moment. That's the Tanakam of the Braisa. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shalosh Kilchos, and Revi, Safil Tefach. Now, Rabbi Shimon disagrees on one major point, and that is, it's three walls, and then the fourth wall being a Tefach. So in other words, Rabbi Shimon just simply disagrees. In other words, you have to be surrounded by three full actual walls, and the fourth wall can be limited to a Tefach. We have a basic disagreement over here between the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon. Obviously, as I'm sure everyone here is well aware of, we follow like the Tanakam, we don't follow like Rabbi Shimon, but the Gemara will spend the remainder of today's daf trying to explain the machlokas. What is behind the machlokas between the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon? Why the Tanakam allows the sukkah to be two walls and then the third wall being a tefach, and Rabbi Shimon requires three walls to be four walls and the fourth wall to be a tefach. But my kemiflagi. Rabbanan Savar Yeshem Lamasar's Rabbi Shimon Savar Yeshem Lamikra. So, could be the suggestion number one of the Gemara that the disagreement between Rabbi Shimon and Tanakam is basically what do we give preferential treatment towards the way the word is spelt in Chumash or the way it's pronounced. This is Yesh Eim LeMikra, Yesh Eim LeMasara. Right? It doesn't translate literally that well. There's a mother to the way it's read in other words like. Aim over here in this context is the same thing as saying of, right? In other words, there are fundamentals. So where do we fundamentally turn to? The way the Torah is read or the way the Torah is pronounced? Very often we find, especially those who are Bali Kriya, so you find that the Torah writes something one way, but it's pronounced another way. So the pronunciation is what's called Mikra. Mikra for the word Kriya, that's how it's pronounced. And then the Masorah is the tradition in terms of how it's spelt. Okay. Sometimes, especially when you get to the Nevi'im, but it happens a couple times in Chumash as well, right? The pronunciation and spelling is totally off kilt. The Tochacha, right? We have that come up. In Nevi'im, it happens where sometimes there's a word that's pronounced that's not even found in the Navi, right? In other words, the Kriya is not even there. Okay. In Rus. That happens a number of times in the Megillat Rus. Okay. Anyway, but so which one do we give credence to? Now, not credence to. We give credence to both. In fact, Tosos here points out we don't. It's not the question of the Gemara over here is do we like one or do we like the other? Tosos here points out we like both. Meaning, obviously, I mean, there's a reason why. The pronunciation demands a certain way, and there's a reason why the spelling demands another way. Meaning, it's both of them have meaning and impart meaning. It just happens to be that if I have to pick a side, that's the way Tosfos spells out the question over here. If I have to pick out a side, so which side do I favor with? So the Gemara says, in this context, let's see. Yesh eim lemikra, yesh eim lemesaris. So Rabbi, so Tanakama, Rabbanan Stavra, yesh eim lemesaris. So the Tanakama says, the way it's spelt. Rabbi Shimon Stavra, yesh eim lemikra, the way it's pronounced. Rabbanan Stavra, yesh eim lemesaris, besukos, arei kanarba. Because Torah describes, besukos. Now, if you heard me pronounce it, it sounds like I pronounce it the same way every time. Good. But if you look at the spelling, remember, we're looking at the Masorah right now, how it's spelled. Besukos, the first two times, was without a vav. Without a vav meaning singular. So the first and second time, it's without a vav, so that's, we're going to count that one and two. The next time, it's spelled in the Chumash, it's spelled with a vav. That's plural. Now again, going back to yesterday's daf, When you see plural, what do you assume?
Two.
Tafasta meruba, lo tafasta. So we're going to assume two. So we have one plus another two. That's four. Hare kan arba. Dacha legufe. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to remove one because I need a pasuk to tell me to sit in the sukkah. So in other words, before we could start darshaning, I need to remove one away just simply for the halacha of sukkah. Pashut tlasa. So now that leaves me with three extra references to the quote-unquote sukkah. Shtaim keuchasam. So now, of the three remaining, two have to be real and full walls. Vasayuchasav v'garas l'shlishis v'kma tefach. And the third wall, well, we have a halacha Moshe Sinai, which tells us that the third wall can be contracted to just one tefach. That's the Tanakhama. Rabbi Shimon, Savar, Yeshem Lamikra. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, you look at not the way it's spelled, but the pronunciation. Basukos, basukos, basukos. Every time it's pronounced in the plural, hare kan sheish. So now that's 2 plus 2 plus 2, that equals 6. Dalchad kar legufe. Now again, we're going to have to take one of the psukim away because I need a starting point. I need to know that we need to send the sukkah. So take one away. Pashlu arba. So that leaves me now with four, because I have two word sukkos. So I have four. Shalshke hochasan asay hochasav v'garas l'revis v'ukim ta'atefach. So the Gemara says that we're going to take three away. Sorry. So three are going to create three real walls, and the halacha Moshe Misina will allow us to take the fourth wall and contract it to just one tefach.
The one that you think away was actually two, no?
Right.
For the
meaning there's a halachla Moshe Misinai that says that however many walls you need, one of them doesn't have to be a full wall. I understand. It doesn't attack the pasuk, it attacks the finished product. On the finished product, take one wall doesn't have to be a full wall. The Ibai Sayyim of the Gemara says, okay, that is all approach number one. The Gemara is going to give a couple more approaches. Ibai Sayyim to Kulam Yeshem LaMikra. Could be that preferential treatment will go to the way the Chumash is pronounced. And it's just a question now, do we need a pasuk for the schach? Does the schach require its own pasuk? Meaning again, the way it's pronounced, it comes out to a total of six. So if it comes out to a total of six, do I need one of them to be used for the schach? Now, we made this point already a number of times, but apparently we can't make it enough. What is a sukkah? The schach. Meaning the very definition of a sukkah is schach. So, do I need one of the sukkah references over here to be used for schach? Rashi points out. The sukkah below schach la mikre. In other words, he can't even call a sukkah without schach. That's the very definition of it. So maybe that's another way to explain it. So, fine. The Ibai Sayyamah to call the Amayeshayam Lamasura. Or maybe we could say another approach, that they all agree that the way the Masura, the way it's spelt, where twice is spelled without a vav, once is spelled with a vav, Achabachim Eflagi, Marsa Vikyasa Hilchasal Lagara, Marsa Vikyasa Hilchasal Lo Sif. And maybe it's just a question of what the Halachla Moshe Messina is trying to do. Is it telling us that what do we have? We have four walls, because there are four sukkahs. Again, one plus two, and now we're going to take one away for the actual sukkah itself. And now we have Halacha Moshe Misinai. Is Halacha Moshe Misinai telling us that the third wall is contracted to a tefach, or no? Do we go the other way? The Halacha Moshe Misinai is those three walls plus a fourth wall with a tefach. Or no? Maybe everyone agrees that the Halacha Moshe Misinai is telling us to take a wall and contract it to a tefach, the yeshem lamesoris, and everyone agrees that the tradition of how it's spelled is key. V'hacha, and which means then that we have four. V'hacha b'darshan tchilas kemiflegi, and can we darshan right away, or no? Do we first have to articulate the basic halacha and then darshan? So if we can darshan right away, so that means wall, four times. One of those walls can be tracted into one. Or no, it's first the sukkah, then wall. One of those walls can be contracted into one. The Gemara says another possibility. Okay, so a number of different suggestions in terms of what the machlokas is between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon. We're going to end today's daf with one more suggestion. So again, Tanakhama says that the sukkah is made up of three walls. One of them could be just the tefach. Rabbi Shimon says that it has to be made up of four walls. One of them could be only a tefach. Okay, so far the Gemara has explained either they're arguing about Yeshem LaMikra or Yeshem LaMisaris, or maybe they're both agreeing to Yeshem LaMikra, and or they're both agreeing to Yeshem LaMisaris, and there are other variables involved in terms of how they arrived at their conclusion. The Gemara offers one more suggestion. Rav Masna Amar Taima to Rabbi Shimon. Could be that Rabbi Shimon has an entirely different understanding of why the sukkah needs to be four walls. And that is, the sukkah needs to protect and insulate. And how do I know that? Mehacha, v'sukkah tiyah l'sal yomah mecher v'lamechsel l'mistor mizermu mimatar. Pasuk should sound familiar because we went over this pasuk in Yeshayahu in the first day of sukkah, right, where we explain why can't the sukkah be higher than 20 amos. So one of the explanations that was given, Rabbi Zeir, if I remember correctly, says that the sukkah can't be higher than 20 amos because it needs to provide shelter and protection. And you have to be under the shade of the schach. And once the sukkah is higher than 20 amos, you're no longer under the shade of the schach. The Gemara employs the same type of argument to explain the position of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that the sukkah has to be surrounded by four walls. Granted that you can cheat a little bit on that fourth wall, but it has to be surrounded by four walls. Why four walls? Because the sukkah's primary purpose is to provide shelter. And if it's there to provide shelter, so if it's three walls, that's nice, that's fresh, that's refreshing. But no, the purpose of the sukkah is to provide shade and shelter. And if it's to provide shade and shelter, so it has to be surrounded by four walls. Again, you could skimp a little bit on the fourth wall, but it's got to be surrounded by four walls. That's another possible suggestion in terms of explaining Rabbi Shimon. It would be nice, assuming I'm right, Rabbi Shimon is Darish time of the crowd. Rabbi Shimon expounds the reasons behind the Chumash, and it could be that he understands the sukkah not just as a mitzvah, but as a form of shelter and shade. The Pasuk in Yeshayahu says so, and it's Rabbi Shimon Lashita so. Okay, maybe. But again, though, another possible suggestion for Rabbi Shimon. Okay, we'll stop here. Tomorrow when we pick it up, another basic daf. Every daf over here is so basic. A lot of geometry coming up in tomorrow's daf. Okay, bring your math minds. But today's daf, we went over the very basics of Halach L'Moshe Mesinai, Shir, Mechitza, Chatzitza. These three areas of Halacha are the primary examples, the fundamental examples of Halach L'Moshe Mesinai. We went through them in depth today, some depth. And then we ended off today's daf with a discussion of how many walls does the sukkah have. Our mission told us three. The Gemara introduced us to a brisa. Rabbi Shimon argues, he says four. But they both agree, though, that there is a Halach L'Moshe Mesinai, that last wall, whether it be the third or the fourth wall, doesn't have to be a full wall, it only needs to be a tefach. Tomorrow we discuss where exactly to place that fourth wall.